This is the American Ag Network Week in Review. In the show today, Rusty Halvorsen gets us caught up on the week's top news.
Before we jump into this week's news, we'd like to share some news from the trade show at Commodity Classic with the folks from Pioneer.
John Sharpman, I am the market lead for Pioneer brand soybeans here in the U.S. Okay. So I head up all things soybean marketing for Pioneer.
All right, we're here at Commodity Classic San Antonio 2020. This past growing season, a challenge for a lot of different guys, but a lot of people embracing the Enlist system.
They are. We're seeing strong demand for the Enlist D3 system for soybeans. And I think it's just really driven by farmers wanting to protect that genetic gain that they know and maximize those yields, giving them a new tool for weed control. Mm-hmm. The herbicide trait itself gives you protection against glyphosate, glufosinate, and the new 2,4-D choline, which has what we call Colex-D technology in the jug with it. And we describe this as near zero volatility. So it stays where you spray it. And farmers are just raising their hands saying, I want to control these tough weeds.
Yep. And staying where you spray it, that's been an issue. You know, that's been an issue.
It's been an issue. You know, if we follow the label directions, it seems like we can pull things together. But the Enlist E3 system makes it just a little easier to pull that system together and again, spray those tough weeds.
It wouldn't be Commodity Classic if we didn't talk new technology, new products. What are you excited about for 2020 and the growing season ahead?
Well, yeah, it's a great question. Well, you know, us involved in production agriculture, we hit the springtime or get ready for spring, and we've got that eternal hope of driving yields. And that's the same with Pioneer. We want to provide these solutions to help these farmers push some unprecedented gains. With our A-Series soybeans, we're continually bringing the latest products to market. In fact, they're the highest-yielding soybeans Pioneer has ever advanced. And then we talked about the Enlist E3 thing, so now we're bringing that into our soybean platform, giving these farmers the tools that they need to really maximize yields.
Thanks for your time here in San Antonio. Another beautiful booth setup and a good crowd in the booth, too. Some excitement.
Yes, it's been a great day, so thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, John, for your time.
Thank you.
A year ago, March winter was stubbornly hanging on with low temperatures, snowfall, frozen soils. Then that winter storm bomb cyclone hit mid-month, rainfall melting snow causing small streams to flood as they attempted to flow into larger ones. The result, extreme flooding from South Dakota to Missouri. Scientists at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration saying on Thursday, major to moderate flooding is projected in 23 states. The regions most likely to experience major flooding include parts of North Dakota, South Dakota, and Minnesota. The potential for major flooding elevated along the Red River, the James River, and parts of the Upper Mississippi River. That according to Ed Clark, director of NOAA's National Water Center. In the southeastern U.S., the potential for heavy floods may be slightly dampened by the early arrival of spring, meaning that sprouting plants and trees are absorbing moisture from the soil and air. For the upper Midwest, farmers and communities hoping for better conditions this year, things still wet in many areas. Dennis Totti is director of USDA's Midwest Climate Hub.
You know, people have said they think they're in a little better spot, at least right now, than they were last year. So that is some bit of optimism. But that, you know, the wet soils still are going to play a role everywhere across the Corn Belt, even out in the Northern Plains, as to how soon we get things rolling and how quickly we'll be able to make progress.
The forecast continues to feature an active storm pattern with rain and snow in the Midwest through the next 10 days.
In the next week, particularly, we have some decent chances for rainfalls and precipitation from central Corn Belt to the eastern part of the Corn Belt. Have some snow in the Northern Plains right now into parts of North or South Dakota, Northwest Iowa. Kind of a little problematic there. Second week, as we get into the latter part of March, still above average chances for precipitation. So we still have these chances there. The optimistic part is that after a cold shot this weekend, generally central to eastern Corn Belt has better chances for being above average in the way of temperature. So that will help us start drying out, help warming up soil. So there's a chance for some opportunities to start getting some things done as we get into the latter part of March.
Toddy said earlier this week the extended forecast indicates warmer and drier conditions in early April, offering the chance for perhaps some expanded field work.
So it looks like as we go into April, we have some opportunities for some windows here and there that we'll be able to take advantage of. And that is kind of reflected in the monthly outlook that just came out this morning from NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, where, warmer is more likely again, and a chunk of the eastern or part of the eastern Corn Belt, and still some above average chances for precip. The problem we have as we look for April, May, June, warmer is still more likely, but wetter is more probabilistic too. So it's kind of an odd situation. Warm and wet seems most likely through the spring. So what's that going to mean? Well, wetness is still going to be an issue. So start thinking about what you're going to do in your various fields and your situation if you are delayed. You're going to take prevent plant, or there's some ultimate things you can do. But don't give up hope, because there does look to be some warmth, which is better than we had last year. That was part of our problem last year. Our high temperatures, we just never got very warm either, along with the additional precipitation. So it's not all roses, but there are some reasons for optimism and thinking ahead. But, do be looking for those opportunities when they come around, balancing that with making sure your soils are in a good situation to be able to get out into them.
Texas regulators are considering curtailing oil production, something they haven't done in decades. Several oil executives have reached out to members of the Texas Railroad Commission requesting relief following an oil price crash. Texas hasn't limited production since the 1970s. A sell-off in commodities and the oil price war between Russia and Saudi Arabia putting a squeeze on U.S. ethanol producers with margins deeply in the red. And according to research by Summit Commodity Brokerage, analysts noted on Tuesday of this past week that they're hearing from some U.S. ethanol plants that they're shutting down, or producers have been unwinding hedges in corn since Friday of last week. Steve Nicholson is a grain and oilseed market analyst with Rabobank.
One of the things of discussions I've had with folks is that think about crude oil. You know, it's one of the most highly traded commodities in the world, you know, the volume. And so people are, you know, a lot of other commodities then take their direction from crude oil. And when we look at ag commodities, certainly there's a couple things we have to look at here that, you know, certainly have been driven by that. Corn has been driven by that, obviously, and it has moved down. And we've seen lows in corn. When you look at, you know, nearby charts on corn, you know, we're at positions we haven't seen really since last fall, so last September. So are they dramatic? No, but they're certainly very low. I mean, we're hitting multi-month low, not multi-year lows. You look at soybeans, and soybean oil is a whole other story. Soybean oil, of course, has gone into biodiesel. We're looking at soybean oil hasn't hit these low points since October of 2006. So multi-year lows of almost 13 to 14, you know, 14 years. So big move down in soybean oil, which will hurt crush margins, which will then eventually back up into beans and be bad there. You know, the other thing that we've also talked about when we look at commodity markets and what the impact is, which is negative, is that think about the consumption of food and how commodity markets move or prices. And those are impacted. One of the most explanatory variables for agriculture demand is GDP. And when you're seeing significant hits to GDP across the globe, you know, from China to here and back, that is going to negatively impact food demand and negatively impact commodity prices. And while that maybe we hope is short-lived, and we think probably will, that's a challenge right off. You know, that's a challenge for the markets right up front. And I think the other thing to think of, and we did mention crude oil, think about ethanol. We're not consuming gasoline because people are staying home. That hurts ethanol consumption. And the other piece of this, which is a bit of a delayed reaction when we look at the, you know, grains and oil seeds, is feed demand. Now, right now, feed demand is good because we have a large number of livestock on feed, whether it's chickens or whether it's pigs or whether it's cattle. But at some point with the prices, and think about beef, and beef is the one that gets hit the hardest, the fastest, is because of the restaurant trade. Eventually, those low prices of cattle are going to impact retention of cattle, And so you'll see numbers of cattle go down, which will, you know, delay the reaction from a feed standpoint on corn and meal, of course, on hogs.
Corn demand by the U.S. ethanol oil industry could drop by 120 to 170 million bushels during the next 2 months if gasoline consumption and the ethanol blended with it continues to decrease as expected. That according to the Department of Agricultural and Consumer Economics at the University of Illinois. Ron Lamberty is Senior Vice President for the American Coalition for Ethanol.
Because of OPEC trying to get together, anticipating a drop-off in fuel use, and then not being able to come to an agreement, and Russia and Saudi Arabia deciding to have a fight over who can bring the price down the furthest for oil, you know, ethanol is a competitor with gasoline, and so when the gas prices drop, which they have dramatically, at least on the wholesale level, I don't know if they've responded on retail everywhere else. They haven't here, but, you know, ethanol follows it. And so, you know, the oil price has dropped, lost, you know, 2/3 of its value in a few months and cut in half in about a week. So the prices for what we already have are, you know, took a beating. And then, you know, over the next couple of months, we're seeing predictions of, you know, 40% less gasoline being sold. So even what we do have, although it's been, you know, revalued at a price lower than cost, we won't be selling that much of it to, you know, in the next couple of months. So it's going to be a tough several months, and who knows how long after that.
Cheap gasoline normally boosts the economy, but that benefit likely won't be realized because of the coronavirus situation.
I know the last couple of weeks, actually, gas purchases have been pretty stable, but that's mostly because, you know, everybody's buying up because they, you know, they're going into hibernation here for the next, you know, however long it's going to be. But, you know, that's, like I said, some of the predictions we're seeing are 40%. And, you know, that just even a few months, you're talking about, you know, a 10% drop off for the year, even if everything recovers fairly quickly. And we have no idea of knowing where that is. So you got plants that are making the tough decision right now. Do we, you know, if everything you make is going to cost you another buck, you know, there's a lot of people trying to decide, do we stay open? Do we close up? You know, what are our options?
Meanwhile, the impact of coronavirus is changing eating patterns, and beef and pork, along with many other products, have been flying off the grocery store shelves. Wholesale products have been rising sharply this week. But Steve Nicholson with Rabobank warns of potential trouble on the price horizon.
Think about just from a beef perspective. We're still going to eat beef, and we're still going to have people eating chicken, and there's still going to be pork and vegetables and fruits and stuff like that, but it's all going to be bought from a grocery store. They're not going to go out to eat, and when people go out to eat, they tend to eat probably a little bit more, and they tend to order beef off the menu because that's kind of I'm not going to say it. It's sort of the preferred. It's sort of a celebratory sort of thing to eat out, and that market just goes away. And so the consumer, you know, and also I think when you go to a restaurant, maybe, you know, the amount of money you spend is a little less. What should I say? It's a little less of an object. But I think the other thing to think about in the restaurant trade, you know, when you think of a recession, we think about in the restaurant trade, we think that middle, that Applebee's, Chili's, those folks get hit because people trade down to more quick service. You know, the white tablecloth doesn't get hit. But across like this, like a shutdown and a potential recession, everybody's getting hit. It's not just QSR. It's not just those middle ground. It is also white tablecloth. And so that changes the whole thing. And now you do get, you know, the other thing that's happening, and it's been well-documented news in the media, is about the hoarding. People are going to the grocery store and buying everything they can, and, you know, frozen vegetables are gone, meat's gone, all those sorts of things. So now you get this, you know, retail sales are going to look great this week, but what does it look like in the future as people, you know, either get quarantined or dwindle their stocks or don't need anything because they're so stocked up? So you get that whiplash as well. But this is almost unprecedented. I'm trying to think of a time to sort of compare this to it, and it's really hard to compare it to. Even 9/11, which shut down a lot of the United States, you know, for a few days or for at least a week, but it's nothing like this, where people have hunkered down at home with their families and you know, stayed in. So it's dramatically different. And I don't know that I can't think of a comparison at this point.
That's what's happening in agriculture. I'm Rusty Halverson.
This has been the American Ag Network Week in Review. Thanks for listening. Join us again next week.